That familiar phrase of the former slave, which seemed to come to his lips as the natural reply to every perplexity - it's all of the goodness of the Lord, led my thoughts away from the individual to the city which lay before me, the city so full of newly found memories, and which, from my own experience, I had learned to call the city of compensation, owing to the fact that it possessed more features of that character than any other I could recall. In my old life I had been frequently driven to the verge of atheism, by a fruitless attempt to reconcile the incongruities of life with the idea of a just and merciful God. Why should the man who was born blind be compelled to bear the ignominy of begging his daily bread with the 101 other hardships which fall to the lot of poverty, while the man who lay in the lap of indolence and luxury should possess all the physical blessings nature could crowd upon him? By what law did genius and want find such attraction for each other, while intellectual incompetency and wealth walked hand in hand? Where was the justice in a life of vicarious pain, which had its origin in another's sin? Mere was the righteousness which threw its influence on the side of the tyrant and oppressor, while the honest saint was left without sign or answer to his cry? I was not by any means the only one who had been perplexed by such inquiries, but from my new vantage ground I could interpret these problems in another and better light. Earth is not the omega as well as the alpha of life, in fact, it is not the whole but only part of the first. It is his ignorance and a false estimate of earth which makes man attach an undue value to its condition. Things assumed a very different aspect in the explanations my memory afforded in my new estate. I remember how I had seen the blind man enter that city while his body enjoyed its sleep, and how at a glance I learned that he himself was not blind, the defect lay in the instrument through which he operated. It is only on the mortal, the transitory side that the gloom exists, on the immortal his vision is unclouded, therefore his hours of darkness only correspond to another sleep. His memory may not be strong enough to bring back to earth the consciousness of what has passed, but who shall say the resignation of these children of darkness may not be due to the echoes of their sleep, life, which still reverberate through their waking hours? In this city the ears of the deaf are unstopped, the tongues of the dumb are loosed, the maimed leap, the idiot understands, the paralyzed forget their infirmity, and the bedridden feel their strength return. Such are some of the kindnesses of the Lord to the unfortunates of earth, during their hours of sleep. Do I not rightly call it a city of compensation? These are memories of gratitude and hope, but there are others of even more weighty import, which for the warnings they convey, I dare not pass by in my message through the mists. I have often been a witness in this city of a mother pleading with her child to keep the yet unfulfilled promise which was sealed in the kiss of death, but since forgotten or ignored. I have seen the mask of friendship torn from the face of hypocrisy, heard the lying tongue convicted by its own utterances, seen the base intriguer exposed before his victim, have heard the yearning counsels of love to wayward children, witnessed the sympathy and affection lavished upon the unfortunate and the prodigal, and listened to the assurances of the presence of loved ones, unseen and unheard, in the hour of trial and temptation. I have seen the continued communion of souls, which the chill of death had no power to break, and the meeting of friends, who, in their despair, had vainly imagined they would never look upon each other's face again. Oh, ye of earth, who received from the closing lips of some loved one the trust or commission they could not linger here to execute, I bid you recall how sacredly you vowed to perform those farewell promises which you have since neglected, as you have forgotten the body which crumbles in yonder grave. That is not your father, mother, friend, which is lying there, they are not dead. They are not away. In the silent corridors of sleep, you are still meeting them night by night. They know your perfidy, and that your word is broken. Time after time they have earnestly pleaded with you, while just as often has your promise been repeated, until not one, but 100 broken oaths are registered against you on the tablets of your soul. Stand still for one moment, and you will feel the weight of these unheeded vows lie upon your conscience until its still small voice cries out in agony, bidding you to keep your word. Why do you not take heed? It is not now a matter which lies alone between yourself and friend. He has been called into the inner sanctuary of God, who will himself now defend his saint, and exact the retribution of your deceit. When the hour of mourning calls you back to earth, how frequently do the echoes of your last assurance continue to ring within your ears? Quit you like men, be strong, arise and keep your compact in spirit and in letter before the weight of your perjury grows too heavy for your soul to bear. And ye who weep, look up. Hush the voice of your mourning, and dry your moistened eyes. The loved ones have not gone away, their kisses are still lingering in freshness upon your lips. Those tender tones, like the departing vibrations of imagination, which steal over you when first you open your eyes, and not all illusions, your dear ones have been with you. You carried to them last night tidings of your home below, and they have told you of theirs above. Can you not feel the pressure of their embraces around you still? And that they expect you will keep your tryst to night? Oh, no. They are not lost, but Jesus loved them so, he drew them just a little nearer to himself, where they could rest in peace beyond the heart ache and the fever. Their exaltation has not ended, it has only changed the hours of your communion from the uncertain seasons of earth's day, to the calm and peaceful hours of night. Think for one moment, are you not conscious how much their love for you has strengthened? So, too, has the atmosphere of their present lives worked out a like result in you, and this, nurtured and continued, will lift you up, and drawing you with themselves closer to God, will finally bring you where they are. They are still more yours in this holier communion than ever you knew before, but they have been honored in their election to that host whom Christ employs as ministering spirits, sent forth to minister to them who shall be heirs of salvation. Chapter 16. Come up higher. If an angel had visited me on earth, and when I say angel, I do not mean one of those inestimable saints of whom we are accustomed to speak as angels in disguise, but a real, live, orthodox angel with shining raiment and snowy wings, and told me that I possessed so many friends in the whole realm of creation, I could scarcely have believed him. But by this time I was beginning to know how next to impossible it is for man to understand much of his real self on earth. Let him for once get but a momentary insight into the true condition of things and he will be humble to the dust, and the prayer of faith, not in a lifeless creed, but in the living God who is immanent, real, tangible to the soul, would be lead thou me on. At the flood of its revelation, coming like a tidal wave, as the returning memory of my sleep, life had just overwhelmed me, it would carry away all tyranny, oppression and selfishness. It would need but one glimpse, one baptism, one blow, the victory would be won and the real brotherhood of man forever an established fact. Hitherto I had not been able, consciously, to call any man my friend in the truest sense of that word, not because I had no desire to do so, for God can witness to the agony with which I mourned my loneliness, but circumstances would not permit it. Those, who by virtue of position might have filled such a place, looked upon me as a crank, with scarcely the right to be at large, without a single interest in the legitimate pursuits of life, and the victim of a morbid craze which led me to spend my leisure among the vulgar poor. With my hatred for conventional hypocrisy, how could I hope to find congenial friendship with these? I could have purchased 100 associates from the enormous class who sell their companionship for cash considerations, but cant and flattery is not food for hungry souls, nor is the slavery less degrading because its fetters are of gold. I might have found many true and congenial hearts down the courts and alleys I so frequently visited, and, secretly, more than once, did I realize something of what it might have been, but the insuperable barrier of society, which forbids the brotherhood of man, stepped in. Not that I feared very much for myself, but the open recognition of such acquaintanceships would, added to my many other eccentricities, have established the desired missing link of evidence, and the walls of some private house of retirement would have put an end to the little sunshine I was able to carry to such miserable places. I was friendless in life, there was no doubt about it. It was my cross, a sad and heavy one, but I tried to bear it, and I found it grew lighter when I became the friend of others much less fortunate than even I myself. That lonely longing, was it not the earth vibration of the friendships I enjoyed nightly in this other life? How the compensation of the one struggles to heal the wound it finds within the other. Here I had so many friends, dwellers on both sides of life, that all attempts to formulate a plan by which I could speedily visit them ended in failure, so at length I determined to let the matter arrange itself. There was one building in the city that possessed a peculiar interest for me, and thither I turned my first attention. It was the rendezvous of those street Arabs who, in large cities, earn a precarious living by selling papers and matches, and to it they attached the designation of the college. Many were the nights I had spent in this place watching the delight with which the visitors appreciated the provision here made to counterbalance the hardships of their other life, and listening to the multitude of experiences which everyone had to recite. Here, too, it was very seldom but one or more of the bright spirits of still higher regions came to minister to these little hungry and ragged wanderers. At such times the difficulties of their faith were always the theme of discussion, and the angel, teacher would patiently and lovingly show and illustrate how these light afflictions, which are but for a moment, work out a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory, working in season and out of season to ground his audience in those acts of reciprocal kindness which so uniformly mark the dealings of this class with each other. Men wonder where these children, gutter, bred, learn these acts of humanity and consideration, which for purity of motive put so, called, Christian philanthropy to the blush, where they are taught to help to bear each other's burdens, where they are first instructed in the practical application of the golden rule. I can answer the inquiry. They are instructed in the elementary schools of heaven, to which they are summoned while their bodies be asleep in dark corners and doorways, under barrels or carts, or in the outhouses of your Christian city. Angels, who have learned the deeper secrets of the love of God, meet with these despised and outcast children there, teach them the geography of home, and show them the surest way to reach that rest which still remains. How could their bare and chilblained feet scale the sharp and icy points of your cold theology while the howling winds of fierce damnation raged around with threatening force? They would slip, fall, and their little souls lie in mangled masses at the foot of some precipice of sectarian contention. They could never enter heaven by such a path. But do not fear, the angels know the road, and in the lessons of their dreams these little pilgrims are traveling homewards through the green meadows of forbearing love, led along by the once outcast Jesus. You need have no anxiety about their welfare because they fall short of your sectarian standard. When you shall enter you will find many such whom you once knew waiting to sing your welcome home. 100 happy voices hailed me as I passed through the tapestries hanging across the entrance, and in a moment I was surrounded by a group of friends who were anxious to embrace me. No need for circumspection here. I could lift the joyous urchins in my big, clumsy arms and kiss and pet them as I chose, for were we not brothers and sisters all? It seemed almost impossible to realize that those laughter-making children were the same that but one or two short hours ago, with hungry stomachs and shivering bodies, were struggling in the hurrying crowds of busy cities, pleading piteously for the unsympathetic passer by to buy a paper or box of matches in the hope that the transaction would secure a meal. Yet so it was. And I wondered what the consequence would have been if the veil could have been lifted before the eyes of one of those who impatiently pushed the child aside, if he had been made to understand that in one short hour that unwashed, ungirded, for gutter, snipe would be in the company of some of the angels of God, in the land of compensation? If the simple truth of the night advantages of these day frustrated ones could only be known, how different their lot would be. What a messenger service would be established across the mists. But would not the removal of the hardships necessitate the cessation of the compensation? If so, the mitigation of the evils of the body would be purchased at the sacrifice of the welfare of the soul, and that would be a price too high to entertain. No, it must not be. God knows best. But heaven forbid that this idea of their compensation should restrain the hand outstretched to rescue or to save. God's ministry is to counterbalance man's neglect, but the harvest of such a mission the man will be compelled to reap by and by. These reunions have another and, in some respects, perhaps, an even more pleasant side than the one I have dwelt upon. The former comrades and companions of these children regularly meet with them again, and are made to minister to their less fortunate friends. Very touching it is to listen to their recital of the pleasures into which they have entered, and the contrast of their present life with the one with which the listener is alone acquainted. Hope is inspired in a gloomy soul, and a thousand speculations made as to the why and wherefore of some apparently untoward event, until the young immortal cries, "But it will be all right, it must be all right, and when you come here and it won't be long now, then we'll remember to look and see how it come all right." By such means are they comforted, and consolation is distilled into their lives, which strengthens them to bear their otherwise intolerable burden. I had not finished my salutations before the curtains were again drawn aside, and another visitor entered, whose appearance caused even more excitement than my own. I did not know at first, but I afterwards recognized that it was he, Arves, who had carried my little charge from my arms when I lay upon the slopes. I also recalled several previous visits which he had paid to the college, and then I became conscious of the object of his present mission. The coming dissolution of the body is in every case known on this side of life in advance, whether by accident or lingering disease. At this time the harvest of life can be ascertained, the condition of the soul on entering immortality is known, and its first dwelling place assigned. From henceforth the soul about to be born is conducted, during its hours of sleep, into its new surroundings, and so made familiar with its coming home. This was the mission of Arves. There was not one in all that assemblage but knew it, every eye was fixed upon him, every child crowded to get near him, upon every face was written the hopeful query, "Is it I?" Was it a shade of disappointment that passed over those faces when the messenger found and designated the lad he sought? If so, can you wonder at it? They knew the sufferings, the privations, and the hardships of the fortunate one would soon be over, for themselves, no one could tell how long the struggle would last, or how fierce it yet might be. Nevertheless they showed heroic courage in the general assent they gave to the cry of joy which broke from the lips of the companion who knew the fortunate lad well. "It's Limpy Jack, but I'm most as glad as if it were me." There was no appearance of accident or deformity to justify the sobriquet by which his friend described him, but that occasioned no astonishment in my mind, for the reason I have already explained, that the deformities of the body are not perpetuated in the soul. Immediately the decision was known, the group opened that the lad might go to Arves, who lifted him in his arms, congratulated, and kissed him, at which another cheer broke forth, making the place to ring. That kiss was the seal of death upon his brow, an evidence of which would be conveyed to the body, so that the sign could be known and read on earth that he would soon be called to heaven. The boy who announced his name followed him as he came forward, and when the cheer died away, looked up at Arves and asked, "Is he a coming soon?" "Presently, as soon as we can bring him away," was the kindly response. "Jack, you won't go and forget us when you come, will you?" "In course I won't." "Why, won't I come here regular, like I does now?" "In course I will." "All right Jack, I'll trust you, and when I wake I'll try and remember you're a coming, and I'll look at you till you do." "God bless you," said Arves, as he kindly patted that faithful little head. Then he turned away to carry the lad to see his new home. I was anxious, if possible, to know their destination, so turned towards the door where Arves was waiting for a moment. "Where do you take him?" I asked. "To the house of a sister who is not altogether unknown to you. Will you go with us?" "I shall be delighted," I replied, "but will he live with her?" "For the present. He needs instruction and guidance, and she will undertake that duty." We travelled what must have been a long distance, but the process of aerial locomotion is by no means wearisome, and the time was pleasantly occupied in listening to the multitude of questions propounded by the lad, and patiently answered by Arves. There was no necessity for me to speak, for the answers so kindly given to the boy were full of information to myself, while I was more than once amazed at the care and patience which were expended upon replies to questions that on earth would have sorely taxed the equanimity of the most forbearing. We passed by several cities of considerable size, whose many beauties were a never failing source of admiration, not only for Jack, but for myself as well. Every object was but another evidence of the pleasures yet in store for me, when the opportunity should be afforded for leisurely visiting each scene and sipping the sweets of knowledge which abounded. There were cities I then imagined, and have since confirmed, that were the originals to which Rome, and Athens, and Carthage, Babylon, Thebes and Nineveh aspired in the days when their beauty touched its zenith. Toil on, O, pious soul, what though on earth thy pilgrim feet may never stand within the sacred shrine of thy heart's desire, what if thy tear-dimmed eyes shall never look upon the land thy kindred call by their sweetest name of home? Thy every aspiration awaits thy coming in far more beauteous guise where the eternal noon abides for evermore. The Jew whose wandering feet have never stood upon the Mount of Olives, the Mohammedan whose eye was never fired at the sight of the mosques of Mecca, the Catholic who had vainly hoped and longed to gaze upon the Vatican, the Christian who falsely dreamed that he would one day stand within the walls of Bethlehem or climb the hill of Calvary, and every earnest soul who had some holy sanctuary, where, with unshod feet, his spirit would fall in worshipful adoration, take courage, when love has wrought its work of purification on your heart, when your hands have grown tender under the touch of kindness, when in your eyes are lighted the beacon fires of affection, and your souls are clothed in the robes of charity and forgiveness, when the Christ of God is born again in you, and you through tribulation have been baptized into him, you will find the better goal than that for which you sigh. And the realization shall be far beyond your anticipation in that home where the soul in every respect shall be satisfied when it awakes in his likeness. Chapter 17. A poetess at home. It was evident, however, that no one of all these cities was to be our present destination. On and on we sped, every instant unfolding some new beauty, calling forth some deeper note of admiration or bathing us in the more profound depths of silent wonder, until we reached a range of hills which seemed to be clothed with all the fragrance and the glory of hope's ideal fruition. Here we paused. Beneath our feet, upon the gentle declivity near the foot of the mountain, stood a single house, not large compared with many I had lately seen, but perfect in the possession of every feature an artistic soul could desire. It was like a realized dream in which some weary painter, musician or poet had sought, and found, rest. Nature herself had been the gardener of the landscape lying before us. I do not mean the unkempt, entangled and disordered nymph which earth calls nature, scattering weeds, briars and thistles in wild confusion all around, but the beauteous angel, who, timid at the result of man's disobedience, withdrew with all her kindred host to heaven, where she could perfect her handicraft in unmolested freedom, and work out in veritable fact and amplified minutiae the sketchy dreams and ideals which should be born within the expanding souls of men. Here color had wooed, won, and lived in sweet fidelity with music. Before me lay the natal bowers of beauty, enchantment, harmony, grace, and rhythm, each of whom held court in one or other of the hundred odorous halls of grove, or hill, or mountain pass. Echo and song chanted their round lay upon the heights for which the lake rippled its approbation in sylvan tones, birds of dream-like plumage warbled their anthems in trees of evergreen luxuriance, through which the breezes breathed the fragrant perfume of the flowers, poem or song with a regularly recurring refrain, while over all, the heavens unrolled their canopy of atmospheric tones and tints which have no names or counterparts on earth. Several friends came to meet us as we approached the house, amongst which I recognized a lady who frequently visited the college and was a great favorite with the children. Jack no sooner saw her than he bounded forward with every demonstration of affection. There was no shyness or vulgarity in his demeanor, this child of the gutter, for had not the sleep part of his life been given to educating and preparing him for the duties and pleasures of this home? And though the alternate circumstances of his waking state had compelled him to assume a low disguise, his royal antecedents had been discovered, and his right was undisputed now. He was the son of a king brought home from exile. There were no inquiries as to where he had wandered and what his associates and position had been, enough that he was found, and though his visits could be but transient for a brief space, all knew that his absence could never again be for long. Congratulations and rejoicings occupied the interval between our arrival and Jack's departure, for the morning on earth soon recalled him to the sale of matches, and the daring cough was rapidly snapping the cords of life. Oh, What a contrast in the two conditions! How ignored on earth, how rejoiced over and welcomed in heaven! But some will ask me why no knowledge, no recollection of the fact, if fact it is. I answer, because you have been schooled to think and still foster the idea that all dreams are the vagaries of the brain, and that the sleep life is a myth and fantasy. God gave to Solomon the promise of his wisdom in a dream, and used the same means to bid Joseph to take the child Jesus into Egypt, and if he changes not he uses the same vehicle now, but ye despise them, then charge your folly upon God. That is my answer to your why. When the time came for Jack's departure, Aves accompanied him as far as the boundary, but I remained in order to gratify a desire I had long entertained for a talk with our hostess. Aves was quite right when he told me that she was not unknown to me. Personally, I had met her on many occasions as she ministered to the habitués of the college, but there was a deeper sense than this in which I knew her. Had not her poems been almost my only companions in the solitude of my earth life? She had seemed to understand life, as I knew it, with its deep soul, longings and unalleviated heartaches, like an almost kindred soul, but she had conquered and found a calm for which I vainly searched. I had learned from the memorials given to the world after her decease that she had been born in the lap of the church, but her father, who was a clergyman, cherished his creed as though it was a divinely silken thread for the purpose of leading pilgrims to their home, not as a barbed or iron fence that would tear and mangle the unwary. Her education had been in the ministry of love, as being the center and circumference of all true religion, and under its ever broadening and deepening influence she had been carried out as upon the bosom of a majestic river into the infinite ocean of her God. Yes, she drifted out, but as she glided heavenward she sang, told all her deep experiences, reflected back again the sunlight which fell upon her soul, thus her voice came with wonderfully soothing influence upon the storms and troubles which encompassed me. She seemed to know the heights and depths, the lengths and breadths of the wondrous love which strung her heart, and when the storm swept over her she would sing of the calm, and so deftly interweave the two as to leave no room for doubt as to our safety. When the night of trial was black and no friendly gleam shone out to guide her feet, she possessed those wings of faith by which she could mount up, and far above the gloom, look ahead to where the sun of righteousness was rising with glorious promises of the day. From such alpine heights her song would come with no uncertain sound, a guiding voice leading more benighted souls to follow her as she had followed Christ. I had followed her, and now I stood beside her for the first time upon her own level. Was there any wonder I should wish to stay behind and pour out my soul in gratitude for all she had done for me? We watched Aves and his charge until they disappeared over the crest of the hills, then, turning, she grasped my hand and said, "Now we can talk, and I may welcome you. And I may thank you for all you have done for me, by your pen," I answered. "But those thanks are not due to me, my brother, they are God's." He filled my cup so full of mercies that it must needs overflow, and whatever music sounded in my verses was not of the cup but in the falling blessings with which the goblet filled. "I know it," I replied, "and my soul does magnify his name. But I cannot be unmindful of the fact that the form of the receptacle has much to do with the sweetness of the music." "Yes, that is so," she answered, with a far away look in her eyes and a softened tone which was scarcely audible, "but even then the thanks are doubly his, for did he not form the cup as well? Come into the garden," she added, as if not wishing to pursue the subject further, "where we may talk among the flowers. Is it not compensation for all earth's toil to be recompensed with such a home as this?" "It is indeed, but yet this is scarcely your ideal of heaven." "No, not my old ideal, but I can see where I, in common with all mankind, made a great mistake. We are not afraid to recognize facts or admit a doubt here for fear of exposing some weakness in our teachings, so I can face the difficulty which would sometimes rise like the shadow of a fear, as I contemplated the sudden transference of a soul from earth into the presence of the King. Then it was a constant struggle for faith to gain anything like a clear conception of heaven. If you tried to listen to its music, there was always a kind of dread that one might hear a discord from some inharmonious voice which had not yet had time to learn the song, You could never look steadily upon its citizens without the tremor of a fear lest one should be found upon whose raiment the semblance of a stain remained. The death bed, especially in some cases, seemed too near the throne to be quite safe. And now? I queried. Now, I can best compare the earth idea of heaven to the experience of a mountaineer, who, at daybreak, starting from the inn, takes a longing look at the peak he desires to reach.